Hi, I'm comedian Eliza Skinner. Welcome to On the Podium.
Riding on the coattails of Olympic and Paralympic greats. With me, as always, is world record-holding para-athlete Scout Bassett. Hey, Scout.
Hey, Eliza.
So, we've got an early start today, and you have training soon, so I see you brought some snacks.
Yes, this is sort of my go-to. It's a green apple. I only like green apples. I'm very specific.
They're snappy. They're pointy. They jab you.
Yes. Yeah. And they have a little bit more of a bite to them. And I like to put a little bit of peanut butter on them. I slice them very specifically. I slice it into fours because it keeps me accountable to not lather too much peanut butter, because people don't realize how many calories are in just even two tablespoons of peanut butter.
I think anybody would be lying if they said they didn't have a very specific way that they like their apples. Is it sliced? Is it whole? How are you slicing it? We all know it. We all know the way we like them. Also, here is the BBC's athletic commentator, Ed Harry. Ed, do you have a go-to snack? And do you know how you like your apples?
I love apples. I love the green apples. Anything with sharpness. So like when I was growing up, we had apple trees in our garden. So I would pick them when they're quite small and eat those. And they're really kind of tart and sharp. I'm also, and they never know how this is going to go down, I'm one of those people that eats the whole apple. I don't take the core out. I've done it since I was probably 11, 12 years old. A friend of mine goes, I always eat the whole apple. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to eat the whole apple too. And I do. And an apple tree has never grown inside me. And I'm still here decades later. So
you eat the seeds?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The whole apple.
Why? It's not pleasant, right? You're not enjoying this. You're not like, yum, it's the seedy part.
No, it is. It's
Wait. Back that up. You eat the seeds and everything.
It's not as though I eat the apple all the way to the core and just have the core, then eat the core. I'm eating the whole apple. Maybe there might be bits of the more kind of corey bits in some of my mouthfuls of apple, but I'm eating the whole apple.
Like stem? No stem, right? No stem.
Oh, no, not the stem. My goodness me. No, not the stem. But
but still, the whole apple.
Yeah, I would eat, because I kind of think, well, I've nearly eaten the whole apple anyway.
It still makes no sense. You're saying this like it makes it make more sense. I still don't get it.
I have no science to back this up. Is this better for our gut? Is it better for our digestion? I don't know. If people think it is, then I'll use that as part of future arguments, because I get the impression I'm losing this argument with both of you.
I'll eat it. I'll eat a whole kiwi, and I've had people respond with disgust at that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
See, I think so too. It's a thin skin, but some people are like, what? You don't skin the kiwi? And I'm like, okay.
Well, you eat the skin as well.
Yeah, it's kiwi crust.
Okay. See, I don't eat the skin off a kiwi, but then who am I to throw stones here in this argument?
But meanwhile, you'll eat the seeds and all the hard parts of an apple. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Very logical.
So, when you're going out to like sit and comment on an event, do you have snacks there with you? You keep a little baggie or something?
There's always loads of water that you can grab. My thing is coffee and a slice of cheesecake.
That sounds luxurious.
Is this a cheesecake, like as in the actual dessert, or is this something else that we don't? That's
you just don't trust him anymore.
Yeah, like a dessert. So like a no. This is conventional cheesecake. So like a New York cheesecake or.
You are so bougie. Like, oh yeah. Before I comment, I need a coffee and a slice of cheesecake.
Sorry, BBC. This is Podium is now becoming a snack and cake podcast. It's all
expert.
We're
I know
expertise. About.
I just cannot get over this. Like you are not what I thought at all. But you know what? That's it's lovely. It's a lovely surprise.
You see, yeah, it makes me feel like you are very particular, and you know what makes you happy, and you'll make that important. The little things.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like here you and I are like, oh, apples with peanut butter, and Ed's here like, oh yeah, coffee and cheesecake. I just can't get over that.
Hey, but there are times in some parts of the world, there are times when you order a cheesecake and it comes and you're like, that's not a cheesecake. And then you think I've made a terrible error. Then you try a different coffee shop and you think, maybe cheesecake here isn't what cheesecake where I usually am is. So then it's more a muffin, because surely a muffin is a universal. So you have to recalibrate your expectations, because people go, no, that's a cheesecake. And you're like, I beg to differ. That's not what I've come to know.
You're not so basic. Like, I might have been a little bit wrong about that. You're not so basic.
I'm ready to pitch this travel series to Netflix. Ed eating cheesecake all over the world. It's called That's Not Cheesecake. It's you. But for now, we have to get to our interview. Who is our guest today, Ed?
Our guest today is the reigning Olympic champion for the 400 meters. And the way she won that race in Rio in 2016 is widely acknowledged to be one of the most exciting finishes in the history of the Olympic Games. And our guest is no stranger to winning things. She was a world champion at 16, again at the age of 17, and the medals have kept coming ever since for this exceptional sprinter from the Bahamas. Shaunae Miller-Wiebo, welcome. You are on the podium.
Thank you so much for having me. So excited to be here.
We're so excited you're here. We actually have some photos of you that we're going to look at to lead our talk. Ed, what's the first photo?
Okay, our first image is our guest's greatest sporting achievement today. And for you, Shaunae, that is the 400-meter gold medal at the Rio Olympic Games. We have a shot of the podium just after the medals have been awarded. So all three of you are stood up there. You're standing in the middle. You're all holding your medals towards the camera. And as we look at it, to our left but to your right is Alison Felix, who won the silver medal. Now, I think what we should do right at the beginning of this episode is talk about how you won, because I said it was exciting and it's gone down in Olympic history. I can't replay the commentary I did that night, because if I do, we'll have to pay the International Olympic Committee a lot of money in royalties. So let's just say you were leading that race for most of the race, and then maybe with about 50 meters to go, Alison Felix, who one of the all-time greats in the 400 meters, is beginning to really close that gap on you. I've probably done the first 395 meters now. The lap is almost up. You tell us about the last 5 meters or so and what happened from your perspective.
I think I have to break it down from the beginning, though. We had a different race strategy coming into this race. And it was literally, excuse my language, but balls to the wall run type of run that we were going after. And so literally from the get-go, we just made a dash for it. And obviously, that's one of the hardest ways to run a 400. But we were willing to test it out and try it and see how far it takes us. And at about 350 or 60 meters, I remember my gas tank going on E. And it was literally reclining from then. It was just like, okay, I'm just like trying to hold on just to make it through. And obviously, I knew the girls were coming in at that time. And first, my legs started to like go under me. And I didn't know if I was really going to make it, talking about the last 5 meters there. And I didn't really know if I was going to make it across. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I hope I make it across the line, because I'm already going down. And I remember seeing Allison in my view to the side corner. And I'm going down and I'm just like, okay, I'm going down. There's nothing I can do about it. I lost all control. And when I crossed the line, obviously I didn't know who had won the race. I was just like sitting down there, tired, couldn't move. So I'm just laid flat in the ground. I remember hearing my mom scream out, and she was like, you won, you won. And yeah, it was just like a joyful moment, tears running down my eyes. Yeah, it was a crazy experience.
So is it a fall? Is it a dive? How would you best sum it up?
You know, it was a fall. And, you know, a lot of people have taken to the dive concept and, you know, made such a great thing out of it. And so I accept the dive thing, but it was generally a fall.
I have never seen anything like that. Was there any, like, criticism around it?
I mean, of course, I got a lot of backlash from it. But, you know, at that moment, too, I was in my prime and enjoying the moment. So I literally paid attention to nothing. But that was just such a special moment. It was just forget everything, enjoy the moment. When we come off, we'll go back to limping. But yeah, but this, just being on the podium and hearing a national anthem play, it's an amazing moment. That's what you compete for.
Yeah, and we should say you're because you it does look like a superhero dive, so let's go for the superhero angle. Because your torso crossed the line first, you won the race. I mean, people have read stuff into that over the last few years. I mean, when people look at a piece of art, they kind of see what they want to see. And you're aware that just that image, it's kind of inspiring to people. And can you see why it's inspiring?
Yeah, no, definitely. That's why I said I've kind of adapted to the dive, calling it a dive. I've had a whole lot of people come up to me and kind of made their twist suit and said, you know, I inspired them in a way that made them dive into their careers and made them dive into trying new things. And so, yeah, I definitely see how it could be an inspirational thing.
You know, it's funny because even my coach talks about that quite often. He's a 3-time Olympian. And, you know, he just always has that mindset of like, you've got to do whatever it takes to win. And I really sort of see that in that moment of you just doing whatever it takes to win. And so was that at all part of, you know, your thought process? I mean, I know it's all happening so fast, but in that, you know, split last 5 meters, was this just like, I've got to go for it?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, at the last few meters, part of me tilting over was me leaning for the line and trying to dip out, and obviously dipping too early and my legs were already up under me. But yeah, just all out guts and glory, just trying to make it to the line first.
Yes, yes. Did you get any nice raspberries after that?
I sure did. Y'all call them raspberries, we call them cherries.
I know that feeling. I mean, I actually recently took a pretty bad fall on the track going all out, and I'm like, that's not something you sign up for or you want to do, because it takes a while to recover from those things.
Yeah, my knee and my hip, because I had slid on my hip, and the very next day, you know, when it's healing and it's drying up and every time you make a little movement, yeah, it wasn't the prettiest.
Yep. And every time you stretch it, it just bursts again.
Sorry.
It did take some time healing.
The glamour of your sports.
Yeah. I know, right?
The old track burn.
Not so pretty.
What about taking the medal home to Bahamas? I know you base yourself in Florida where you train, but what was the reception like? And not just the big reception, but also like bringing it home to your family as well.
Well, first off, I had my family there in Rio with me. I got to spend the victory lap with them too and cry on their shoulders. And it was such a proud moment for me and a very humbling moment as well, especially being able to take it home to my country and see them go crazy and celebrate with me and all the hard work that we've put in over the years to see how proud they were of me. It was an amazing feeling.
And time to move on to another photo, Ed.
Our next image is an image of childhood, and this is a head and shoulder shot of you as a little girl, and you look so happy in this picture. It's one of those smiles that really does go from ear to ear. There's a real glint in your eyes as well. When I look at this, I kind of think there is a very, very happy child. I bet they're a real handful as well, though. So give us an idea of what little Shaunae was like when she was growing up. Was there any hint that she was going to become an Olympic gold medalist? There she is.
Oh, man. My childhood was so great. I always smiling. It's always been a part of who I was. But yeah, just I've always seen myself doing this from the age of 10, I would say. You know, I would always go around and tell people, you know, I want to be a golden girl. This is what I want to do. Because, you know, the golden girls were the big thing in the Bahamas.
I'm just going to skip over it's you don't mean the sitcom. You
the golden girls, yeah. No, in the country, yeah.
This is the 4x100 meters relay team, women's relay team from the Sydney Olympic Games who won the gold for Bahamas.
And this was right around the time when I started track and field as well. And I remember watching them, and basically the entire country was up at that time watching the meet. And it was early in the morning. And after they ran and they won, there was like a big celebration on the outside. And so everyone was out in the streets, and I'm talking like everybody was just out in the streets and celebrating. And so, yeah, that moment there too, like got me really excited. It's just like, I want to do this. Like, I want to make the people proud like this as well. And even like growing up too, I would sign autographs on a piece of paper and just like give it to people and be like, you're going to need that someday.
Good for you.
Love it.
And, you know, people are just like laughing, boil it up and throw it in the garbage and everything else.
Fools. They threw it away.
I know. But yeah, no, I've always just enjoyed competing. The thrill of it. My parents, they threw me into track and field. My mom, she did softball, and my dad, he did track. All of my granduncles, they track. So track wasn't really an option, but it was the only sport I was really good at.
How old were you when you started running track?
I started running track for my school when I was 6.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so my dad, he would throw me in with the school team and just have me compete with them. Fun fact, from the age of 9 or 10, I was competing with the high school kids. I wasn't supposed to, but they threw me in because I was still one of the best in my school at the time. And so they would throw me in. It was a primary school and high school. And so they would throw me in with the high school meets. And I mean, I wouldn't be able to beat the high school kids, but I was still competing with them. And so that was a cool experience.
So can you tell us just growing up or, you know, as you got into track, did you have any role models or heroes in the sport or outside of sport that were great motivations or inspirations for you?
Yeah, no, definitely. I would say the two that I really looked up to, first Veronica Campbell Brown, being that she was from the Caribbean, she was a sprinter, and you know, she always competed really well and was always winning. And so yeah, that was always someone that I looked up to and wanted to be like. And then Usain Bolt. I mean, who didn't look up to Usain Bolt? I mean, he's just a freak of nature. And so, yeah, I remember, well, first off with Veronica, I got her autograph when I was 18, I think, and I cried.
Oh.
Just putting that out there.
Oh, we love to hear it.
I cried in that moment. But I also got Bolt's autograph when I was 13. I was 13. He came down to NASA to compete. And he won, and I remember just watching him race because it was an NASA, and he just lighted up the track, and that's when we gave him the nickname Lightning Bolt as well. And I was just like, I have to get his autograph, and there was so many people, and I was just like squishing myself through everybody, and I didn't think I was gonna get his autograph, but when I went up to him and he signed it, I was just like, it melted my heart, and yeah, always been a fan since then.
And of course, he definitely knows who you are now.
I would hope.
What's it like to go from an autograph seeker, hunter, to a peer, to a contemporary of his now? And have you now been in a possible role reversal where maybe somebody that got your autograph or you took photos with when they were younger are now competing with and against you?
That's a good question. I actually, after that moment of getting his autograph, the next time that I actually saw him like in person next to me was 2015. That's when I got the silver in Beijing. And we were coming into the hotel at the same time and he like wrapped his arm around me. He's like, good job and everything else. And I'm just like, I'm melting away. He just did a good job.
He recognized that he knows me.
I know, but yeah, no, that meant so much to me. And I remember like freezing for a second. I was just like, can I get a picture with you? Autograph, I just need a picture now with you. And yeah, I mean, you know, he's such a sweet person as well, and you know, so motivating. And yeah, just to be able to be there with him and him acknowledging my accomplishments as well, it's an amazing feeling. And yeah, now even now it doesn't feel real, you know. I know that I was in that position growing up and always wanted to get people autograph and always looked up to certain athletes, and now to be in this position where athletes look up to me as well, it doesn't feel real, because I still feel as though I'm still that little kid, still growing up to try and accomplish my goals as well. And so, yeah, I'm always out here just trying to be my best version of myself and try to inspire the younger athletes as well to come up and just do their very best and, you know, see where it takes them.
Mm. I do have a question for you, not necessarily relating to that, but I want to go back real quick to your photo that we just saw. You have a great style, hairstyle look going on, and you've continued that. In fact, that is one of the things that we know you by and identify you by is all of your iconic hairstyles and colors. So when did that start? How do you pick, you know, do you have a plan, like, okay, Tokyo, this is what I'm gonna do for my hair? Or yeah, I just want to know more about it, because it's just so cool and it's really different, and I think it's really great in our sport where we only hear or see people every 4 years typically, where we can really remember them by something that's somewhat iconic.
Well, thank you. Since I was a young girl, I've always liked colors in the hair. A lot of the Bohemian women, they would always wear colors, and they would always be seen as ghetto growing up. But I always had a taste for it. And, you know, that was just their way of expressing themselves. They would come with the red or the green or the yellow, the blue. And I always just really loved it. My mom, she always did streaks of color in her hair as well. After a while, I was just like, you know what, I don't care anymore. Like, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to express myself. And my first bold one was when I did the pink and the purple. And I was just like, I'm so in love with this. I'm going to rock it. And a lot of people liked it as well. But yeah, it was just a way of showing myself and showing my personality and showing my love for colors. And just letting people know you can express yourself whichever way you please and whatever makes you happy.
Well, we realize this is, it might be top secret, but do you have a look in mind planned for Tokyo?
I do.
Okay. Any hints?
I am going to be going for the Japanese culture and trying to get a mix of it inside there. As well.
All right, y'all, you heard it here first. We're looking forward to seeing what that looks like. I'm sure it's going to be fabulous and very memorable.
Thank you.
This is On the Podium with me, Eliza Skinner, Scout Bassett, and Ed Harry.
Our guest is the defending 400 meters champion, Shawnee Miller-Webo. I think we've got another photo, Ed.
Yeah, we like to look at someone's life away from the sport that they do, that look at something which they're perhaps their passion's elsewhere, away from the arena. And yours is your wedding day. And I got to hold my hands up here. If people aren't wearing sportswear, I'm terrible at this. I'm terrible at describing what people are wearing. So I'll just say, in this wonderful photograph, which will be great in any wedding album, it looks like it should be in a magazine photo shoot. You both look absolutely stunning. So you can tell us about the dress if you would like to, because I'm not capable of doing that. But tell us about this man, and tell us about this very, very special day.
It's a wedding dress, Ed.
Yeah, I know, but they're never just a wedding dress,
you know that,
are they?
One? Okay, yeah.
This was by far the best day of my life, the happiest day of my life, marrying my best friend. And yeah, you know, we had our families there and our friends and just supporting us. And it was just a beautiful day overall. My look, you know how girls have dreams in mind of what they want to do when they get married. But I always had my goals of having a Cinderella dress going down the aisle. And it was such a beautiful day. And just to be able to spend the rest of my life with my husband, it's amazing.
I understand you're both athletes. And when you're away from the track, do you all talk about training and performance and racing, or when you're away from there, you're able to just leave that behind?
Oh, that's a good question. We actually do spend the entire day together, basically, because we train at the same time and then we go straight from training home.
It's not too much together time? You don't get tired of each other?
No. Okay, let's say that we have a really good day of training. We would come home and we'd be like, yeah, so I worked on this and I worked on that. I feel like what I could work on is this and what I could work on is that. And, you know, things along that line. We're always like trying to help out each other and asking each other how training went and the things that we could improve on and the things that we worked on and things along that line. So, yeah, we're always talking track.
Are y'all competitive?
No, we're very competitive.
I figured, two athletes.
A few weeks ago, we went out to do a little bit of mini golf. But I would always want to win. because I'm very competitive, but he also wants the win as well. And so at the beginning, it's all sweet and cute. And it's like, ah, and then towards the end, it's just like, you're cheating with your points. I'm winning. It gets like super competitive.
I love this, the idea of like two world-class athletes fighting tooth and nail over mini golf. Like, we're not moving on from this windmill until you admit you cheated.
And that's the thing too, if he wins, then he's like, and he knows, like, I'm feeling some sort of, he's like, okay, let's play again. I'm like, no, I don't want to play again, because now you're gonna tell me that you're letting me win. No, thank you. Whenever we do compete against other couples though, or other family members, we're the perfect team.
I bet. Switching gears here, Shawnee, I wanted to ask you about something a little bit more serious. You are married to someone who is not of the same race, and I'm just curious if that has brought up, some challenges or perhaps even judgment, from college to today, since you two have been together.
We've definitely gotten some feedback on it, negative feedback, from since we were even dating, where some people would be like, oh, well, you know, he's a white guy, why are you moving away from your race, or, you know, things along that line. And, you know, we just don't really pay too much attention to it. For us, it's love is love. And, you know, we go from there, and it's just all about finding who you love and who makes you happy. And, you know, that's all that matters. But even just understanding each other, we've understood each other to different extents, even down to culture. You have different cultures as well. And so, you know, just getting a better understanding of who we are and our background and things along that line. And yeah, I know we have a great understanding with each other. And yeah.
That was really well said.
It's wonderful to celebrate a coming together of, you know, the Bahamas and Estonia, the Caribbean and Eastern Europe. I remember watching, and it's a few years ago now, an interviewer asking you both, I think he said to your husband, Michael, give me your best Bahamas accent or something like that. And he asked you, how many words do you know in Estonian? And I thought, that's not a very fair question. But I'm assuming now you know some more. Surely you know some more than a few years ago, right?
It's so unfortunate. The sad thing is I've forgotten a lot more since then.
Oh,
so,
no.
I think I know less now than I did then. But yeah, no, I still do want to learn. I always say that when I have kids, I'm probably just going to sit down and learn with them as he teaches them. But I definitely want to learn, because even when we go over to Estonia, you know, a lot of his family still speaks Estonian, and I'm just sitting there like, what did they say?
Yeah. Translator.
I definitely want to be a part of the conversation. And so, yeah, that I'm probably going to start back up again, not today, but soon.
Yes. Maybe post-Olympics.
In Tokyo, in the build-up to the Olympic Games, you wanted, and I think to some extent you still want to do, not only the 400 metres, but the 200 metres as well. And it looks like, as we're speaking, the schedule isn't going to be tweaked to allow you to do that, because if the schedule isn't tweaked to explain, you'd literally perhaps be going from a heat in, say, a 200 into a semi-final in the 400 or something of that order, that it would just be impossible to do both. I mean, the fact that the furniture, if you like, hasn't been moved around to allow you to do both, is that disappointing? How hard has that been to come to terms with?
It's been very disappointing. Because, you know, I've been asking for some time to get the schedule changed, especially for the Olympics, and wanting to go out there and really give the double a good go. You know, we asked a few times and they told us pretty much no, that the schedule allowed it. But, you know, even with the guys and the girls' schedule, it still isn't the same schedule. Usually the guys would have the same 400-meter schedule as us, and they now have a two-day break, which still technically allows for them to be able to double. And so none of their events collide, but it's our events that our four heats are the same day as our two finals. And yeah, it's just a whole lot. So it was very disappointing.
So speaking of what is to come, what do you see, you know, in your future? Are there other things you're interested in and getting into. I mean, you're still plenty young, so possibly maybe in another Olympics, or, you know, what are you hoping, you know, for the future?
I definitely have another Olympics after this one in me. I don't know about the next one after that. But yeah, I'm still young. I still want to try different things. You know, from since I was younger, I always told myself that I never want to be just one specific type of runner. And I think over the years, I've done so well in the 400. But, you know, even when I was younger, I never seen myself doing the 400. Per se, I was kind of jabbed into it. But, you know, I've accomplished a whole lot. And yeah, I'm looking forward to focusing on the two and eventually focusing on the 100.
We hope you're winning gold again in Tokyo. And before you go, I just want to know, is there any mileage in doing what your other half does? He does a decathlon. So for women, that would be a heptathlon. You were good at a lot of things when you were growing up. You told us all about all the different things that you did week on week. So any mileage in that? Does he try and persuade you? Come on, do the multi-events.
He does. I'm definitely, I'm jumping the gun with saying this because me and Coach still have to finish discuss this. But next indoors, I'm going to be looking at doing the pentathlon and maybe testing out a hep. I don't really know about the hep because I'm not very good at jab. So that would have to put in a whole lot of work. Also, maybe a 4 hurdles at some point, just one. And then, yeah, that's it.
Oh, wow, we can't wait.
you've got a lot of big plans in front of you, and we are so thankful that you took some time for us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for having me.
Oh, she was great. So chill. Very chill vibe.
Yeah, I like it when someone is a fierce competitor, but there's a switch, and when she's not that, she's Shaunae, and she's thinking about all the other stuff that she can think about. And I just think it's nice that people have different gears they can go through.
So Scout, this dive that she did, sort of, I mean, she also sort of was like, I didn't really dive, I fell. But I feel like she, I feel like there was still that she had, that mindset that she had to have of staying completely focused on winning, and all of your actions following that focus.
At the end of the day, with whatever controversy that was followed by that movement, she didn't do anything that is against the rules. And a win is a win, a lean, a fall, a dive is a dive. And at the end of the day, if your chest is crosses that line before somebody else's, that's a win. In her case, that's exactly why you rehearse, you practice, you've thought about doing it. I can guarantee you that was not the first time she ever thought about something like that or needing to do something like that. That's something that I know some athletes even, you know, train doing, that lean.
I thought it was really interesting that you mentioned that your coach even talks about her finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about that race. Yeah, in fact, even before I told him we were going to have her on this week, he actually pulled up the photo finish on his phone and showed me. And, you know, he was kind of, well, you're leaning too far back at the line. And it's a little bit tricky when you've got a prosthetic because it's easier for me to lean at the line if my lead foot is my anatomical leg. Whereas if I'm leaning at the line and the front leg is the prosthetic, it's almost not impossible, but it's really difficult to be forward leaning, right? Because the prosthetic, it's a fixed position for the most part. It's not like it bends the socket or anything like that. And so it's really difficult. And so we're constantly, you know, positioning like, you know, that lead foot so you can get a better lean. And so, you know, he was kind of getting on me, and then he pulls up and whips out the photo finish, like, if this is what you have to do in Tokyo, like, this is what I expect, the kind of effort. I was like, okay, a little. And meanwhile, I had just taken a fall very similar to that she did about 10 days ago, and I can tell you it is brutal.
But it goes to show how iconic this has been for winning and staying focused on the win.
Most of the time in a major final at 400 meters, the person in Shaunae Miliwibo's position would have lost that race. They would have been pipped on the line because different tactics. I'm going to leave it all out there and I may fade away to nothing in those last couple of meters. Whereas the other competitor, they're more even in their pacing and they're going to chase me down. And most of the time, Alison Felix or whoever it was chasing with that more even pace across the full one lap would have won. And the fact that it's this kind of almost, it's thoroughly instinctive, isn't it? I think the lines there, I'm going to start to lean. Oh, I'm a bit early, but now my momentum, I will get across this line. I've seen very close finals in global finals where the person in her position lost the race. And the first thing, particularly ex-athletes sitting in the press tribune say is, why did so-and-so not lean? Why didn't they lean? Well, she did lean. I mean, she went way too early, but it just gave us this superhero. It is when you catch it in midair, but then she goes crash. And yeah, you've been telling us exactly what that's like. But yeah, a gold medal. So that heals a lot of cuts and bruises, I guess.
Yeah, probably why she wasn't worried about that when she was on the podium, because winning cures a lot of things.
That's it from us. You can head online and see the photos we've been talking about. Just search for BBC Podium. Next time, Scout Bassett, Ed Harry, and myself, Eliza Skinner, will be joined up on the podium by another very special guest.
I still get excited. Till this day, I was the first black in Africa, I don't know, in the world, to win a gold medal in the sport of rowing. So yeah, still gives me goosebumps.
The story of Olympic gold medalist Sizwe Nluvu. That's next time on the podium.